Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 90, The Language of Dreams, May 15th, 2007. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
A lot of folks talk about dreams as speaking a different language, but up until recently, when some of the ability to do deep brain scans has been with us probably now for about 10 years, we're finding out more and more about how what parts of the brain are actually active and how possibly dreams might be formed by the brain. And it turns out that our language centers are offline when we dream. That's the part of the brain that basically identifies things in terms of, you know, naming or titling, things of that sort. That's offline. So dreams really communicate in a different language.
That was the voice of my guest, Robert Haas. Robert Haas, MS, is author of the book Dream Language. He's also executive officer and past president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams and a faculty member of the Hayden Institute for Dream Leadership Training and an adjunct faculty of Scottsdale College. A scientist and former researcher in the field of light energy, he was a pioneer with multiple patents in the field of optical communications and was corporate vice president for global communications at both American Express and IBM. He now devotes his science and management skills to dream studies, for which he has been a frequent guest on radio and TV, and an internationally acclaimed lecturer and instructor for 30 years. His unique, simple, but powerful dreamwork approach is based on his training in Gestalt therapy and background in Jungian studies, the neurobiology of dreaming, plus his pioneering research on the significance of color in dreams. Here's the interview. Robert Haas, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thanks. Fun to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I know that you're a longtime dream worker, and listeners to this show know that I also have a passion about dreams, so it's really exciting to have you here, and I know that you're also involved with an upcoming dream conference, and we'll save that to the end of our interview, and I'll invite you to tell listeners about that. And I've got a copy of your book, Dream Language, right here beside me. So if I run out of any material here to ask you about, I can always refer to that book. Now, I know you had some kind of a corporate background before you ever got into this dream stuff. You worked, I believe,
American Express and IBM, yes.
Yes, exactly. So I'm wondering, how in the world did you get from American Express and IBM into dreams?
Well, actually, I've been doing the dream work for about 30 years. So I got there before I got to American Express and IBM. So I've always had the interest, and in fact, it was the early years that I got most of my training in Gestalt therapy and some of the other humanistic approaches that were coming up at the time. And I started even teaching at some of the colleges, Richland College, for example, in Texas, courses in this field. And was going to actually pursue this full-time as a job, but unfortunately, the corporate world pays very well.
Right.
So I ended up living a dual life, and actually, I made it to a senior ranks in both American Express and IBM. I was one of the senior executives there. I was a vice president with global responsibility, so it was a big job. And finally, at some point, I just decided, hey, that's it. You know, I've done enough. I've got enough that I can live on. So I quit probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and have been focusing on this, my true love here, which is the area of researching dreams.
Well, it's great that you're able to do that, that you're able to kind of go out there and stack up a bunch of coins and now, now follow
your
passion.
It doesn't always happen that way when you plan it, but this time.
That's great. So you're able to follow your bliss. Well, what was it that got you interested in dreams, though?
Well, I think it was actually early childhood dreams that were so exciting to me. Alan Siegel wrote up one of the dreams in his book. It was pretty astounding, where I kept over and over again seeing this sky, this storm occurring in the sky, and it became a storm of colors, which got more, at first it was frightening. I'd try to run away, and you can't really run in some dreams. And then suddenly the storm night after night would become more colorful, more beautiful, and I would actually look forward to this storm occurring. Alan talked about it in his book, that sometimes dreams do this. It's a way of actually maturing and creating interest in our later life. So he felt that perhaps my interest in dreams and interest in color and dreams came from those earlier dreams.
That's right. There are certainly other instances of that. I was just talking to someone else about how childhood dreams can often be formative, and we reflected back on Carl Jung and some of the dreams that he had as a child that seemed to shape his whole career. And, we should let people know that the subtitle of your book, Dream Language, the subtitle is Self-Understanding Through Imagery and Color. So so they can understand that childhood dream of yours actually seemed to manifest itself in a research interest later in life.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Well, you call your book Dream Language, and so can you tell us why you use that term, dream language? What is it that we see in our dreams that constitutes a dream language?
Well, a lot of folks talk about dreams as speaking a different language, but up until recently, when some of the ability to do deep brain scans has been with us probably now for about 10 years. We're finding out more and more about how what parts of the brain are actually active and how possibly dreams might be formed by the brain. And it turns out that our language centers are offline when we dream. That's the part of the brain that basically identifies things in terms of naming or titling, things of that sort. That's offline. So dreams really communicate in a different language. They turn into, it's sort of like an internal processing language for the parts of the brain that are actually active. It's sort of like looking in on the internal processing of a computer and say it's native machine language is what we're dreaming. And the bizarre nature of our dreams really comes from a unique state of our dreaming brain. These brain scans show that while we're dreaming, much of the brain is quite active when you dream, even more active. Some parts are even more active than when waking, but other parts are inactive. So we're not really asleep. A lot of our brain is still processing information. Our cognitive reasoning centers are inactive. Thus, anything that's bizarre that occurs in our dreams is really not filtered by this concept of reality. Also, as I mentioned, our speech centers are active. Thus, the things that we see in our dreams are not identified with the words and titles as they would be in waking life. They're really, as we'll see in a second here, are really identified by associations, associated memories, and emotions.
Yes.
So that's the identity of these things in the dreams.
Yeah, in a way, it's like put the body to sleep so that the brain can wake up.
You got it. Yeah. And, sort of explain why things are so bizarre and what's going on in a dream is that among the parts of the brain that are very active is what's known as the limbic system. This whole midbrain seems to become active when we dream. And the limbic system is responsible in waking life for processing emotions and memories.
Yes.
And this really leads a lot of researchers to believe that dreams are processing emotion. Perhaps unresolved emotional issues of the day, as Jung contended. And the other thing is that many of the cortical regions of the brain that are active in dreams are associative regions. So they actually form associations, such as the visual associated cortex. It seems to be forming associations with what is being processed in the midbrain, and it's these associations that we become aware of as our dreams.
Yes. You know, we are sort of, I'm stumbling over my words here. We're primarily, vision is very dominant for us as a species. And I've wondered about dogs and bears for whom smell takes up such a large portion of their cortex, where vision takes up a large portion of our cortex. And it's made me wonder if perhaps dogs and bears dream in smells instead.
Dream in smell. Well, we know that folks who are blind from birth tend to dream in all their other senses. So we kind of dream the way we live our lives, you know. Uh-huh. In fact, there's a part of the brain, it's called the inferior right parietal cortex, which is responsible for our visual spatial skills, for creating a space out of all the images and things that come to us. And so it's likely, and it's very active in dreaming, so it's likely the part that also brings together all these associations into an actual dream space. And so if you're an animal, for example, you see your world in terms of very different senses than we do. And if you're blind, for example, from birth, you would see your world in terms of all these other senses, but you still see the world. And so I would imagine that that's exactly the way their dreams are. They see their world in their dreams much like they do in waking life.
Interesting. And so then the way that a dream is formed then is, how would you describe that?
Okay, well, just let me give you an example which might help. Now, this is an example based on extrapolating from some of the research that was done. So it's not say this is exactly how they're formed, but it would give you a good idea. So let's take an example of a lady who receives a surprise gift from a man she has admired. She didn't know this guy really liked her, but all of a sudden he gives her this gift. And she has the following dream. I was flying high in the air being pulled by a pink butterfly. That was her dream. Now, how do you relate those two?
Yeah.
Well, what's occurring at night is that while this emotional situation is being processed, the fact that this is a surprise situation to her, it's a new situation. So at night when she dreams, the midbrain starts and the limbic region starts processing all the emotions around the situation. And while this is being processed, the cortical regions that are active, the ones that create associations, are creating associations with what's being processed in this midbrain. And it's these associations that created this strange dream. So let's take an example of how it might have happened. The visual associative cortex, for example, say, might create a representative picture image of the feeling of having butterflies in her stomach when she received this gift. So let's say that part of the cortex represented this feeling of butterflies in the stomach as an actual butterfly in the dream. And likewise, the cerebellum, which creates a sense of our motion in the dreams, we feel we're really moving in the dreams, that might represent the feeling of elation that she felt in waking life by a sense of soaring or flying motion in the dreams. And then on and on, the region that's responsible for processing color, which is active in dreams, might represent this loving feeling or emotion as the color pink. And so what happens is all these different associations being created in the parts of the brain might be coming together in this visual spatial space, this sort of dream space that I call the inferior right parietal cortex, to where it combines all these imagery together into being pulled through the air by a butterfly. So even though the dream seems nonsensical, you can see that each individual association that made up that dream image of being pulled through the air by a butterfly made perfect sense. It was totally linked to the emotions surrounding the situation.
Okay, yes. So what about the person who wants to understand their dreams? You talk about dreams speaking in another language. How can we understand that language? What's your take on that?
There's a few principles. I'll give you, there's three principles I'll discuss here if we got a second, because I think it's good before you try to work on a dream to understand how this language actually works in the brain. The first principle is that dreams are not literal. They really speak a language of metaphor and association. Mm-hmm. And most people who work with dreams kind of understand that dreams speak in metaphor, like parables. They speak in some sort of picture language, you might say, or play on words.
Yes.
And I'll give you an example of that. Here was a dream where a woman said, "I was in a clinic, and a nurse was checking me over. She felt some lumps in my groin area and exclaimed, 'She is riddled with cancer. I'm not afraid to die, but asked the nurse if she could give me something to keep me going through all the pain.'" Now, imagine, what would you do if you had a dream like that? The first thing you'd think, "Oh my God, my dreams are telling me I have cancer."
I'd rush off to the doctor.
Right. So, but when you have a dream like that, it's always a good idea to go to a doctor too, and at least have a check off up. And that was really the first impulse the dreamer had. She said, "Oh my gosh, I have cancer," and she actually did go to the doctor to get a checkup. Then luckily, no cancer, no problem. But when we worked on the dream, she was really still concerned about this dream about her having cancer, even though the doctor said no problem. And so we started working on the dream more from a psychological standpoint, and I discovered that this was a woman who saw all of her relationships in terms of astrological signs. And at that moment when she had the dream, she had a boyfriend she wanted to break up with who was astrologically a Cancer.
Oh, yeah.
And she was uncertain how to break up with him, which was the riddle in the dream. She was riddled with cancer. Oh. So the dream was speaking about a relationship in metaphors. Okay, so when you look at your dreams, because the speech centers are offline, your dreams are speaking in this different language of metaphor. That's the only way they can talk. They can't talk like your normal waking speech. So they speak in that way. So that's the first thing about the dream language.
So the first principle is don't take it literal. It's metaphor.
It's typically a metaphor and association.
Okay.
There's been a few cases where dreams speak very literally. But it's kind of rare. So it's best to, if you're dreaming of a plane crash, that doesn't mean don't get on the next plane.
Right.
Take a look at the metaphors and associations in your dream.
Right.
So that's the first principle. The second principle is the images and associations you see in your dreams are personal associations. So here's an example that we can use with your listening audience as well. So imagine that you dreamed of a door. So at this moment, imagine you see a door in front of you.
Yes.
Okay? And envision that door for a moment. Look at its appearance, its color, its size. Now answer this question in one sentence. What is the purpose or function of that door?
Yeah.
So how about yourself, David? What is the purpose or function of your...
The function of the door is to let me in.
Let me in. Okay.
Yeah.
The function of my door might be opening a new threshold.
Super.
Now, when you ask this question around, and some of your listeners might have different ones, some will say to open a new place, sort of like our definition. Some will say to keep people out, or to open and close and let things I want in, and so on and so forth. So what's happening here? Everybody envisioned a door. So that's the left brain says, okay, I'm going to create a door. It knows what a door is, so it creates the image of a door. But the right brain, the more dreaming part of our mind, that part of the brain that processes things more like a dream, when it identifies the function, it's very different for each one of us.
Right.
So it just shows that basically when we create an image in our brain or see an image, our brain automatically links imagery with personal associations. And so if you want to know what that thing in your dream means, then investigate your personal associations with it.
Right. For example, the door that I saw actually was a door from Dublin, Ireland. It was red. It had a brass, and it was those Georgian doors that you see a lot in Dublin.
Wow.
Other So it was very specific and very personal. And so it had both the literal image was personal, and then, of course, my take on it is let me in. You know, that's probably very personal and unique to me. For another person,
even more personal,
yeah,
yes.
Another person might say, oh, well, it keeps you out, you know?
Yeah. So what you see here, the natural function of the brain is to take any image, whether you created it or whether you saw it, and it subliminally associates it with lots of past memories and things of that sort. So, and this is just a natural function of the brain, and it happens in your dreams. So your dreams are really these associations. And this is why dream dictionaries can't work for you, because the dream dictionary is the association of the author. If you want to find out about his dreams, go ahead and read the book.
Yeah, you still see these little booklets in supermarket checkout lines, you know, how to interpret your dreams, and then they'll list, you know, if you dream of a crow, it's death, and if you dream of a duck, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I remember there was one I read is something like, if you dreamed of a white dove or something like that, you're going to Washington, D.C.
That's very specific.
I mean, some of them are bizarre. Some of them are relatively good metaphors, but they are really the associations of the author or, you know, the people he's talked to, not or he or her has talked to, not your own personal association. So why read the book when it's so easy to just kind of define the image and figure out your own association?
Yes.
Yeah. And then there's a third principle, which is key to the approach that I use with dreams, and that is that there's a wealth of information in a single dream image. Even though it's good to work with a whole dream and many images, there's an awful lot of information in just one dream image. And the associations that are buried within that image are apparent if we let the dream image speak itself. I mean, we did a little simple exercise here with defining the image, but if you let the door talk, mm-hmm. you're going to get an awful lot of information. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example of that. Here's a dream that of a fellow that said, I dreamed I was standing in a sweet potato patch across a barbed wire fence from my boss. In waking life, I just can't seem to do anything right. My boss is always disapproving of me and my work, and no matter how hard I try, it gets worse. Okay, so this was the guy's dream and sort of a reflection on his waking life. This was a case where this was a male dreamer. He had a big ego, big male ego, yeah. And he had a hard time not only working for the female boss, but really he had a terrible time admitting to himself that he needed her to praise him, okay, in order to do a good job. So his kind of his male ego would not allow him to admit to himself or her that he needed to be praised. So kind of going on the principle that Fritz Perls, who developed Gestalt therapy, which is the what I derived this approach from, letting the dream image speak. He basically said that the most minimized or dehumanized parts of your dream can relate to the most rejected or alienated parts of your personality, the things that you can't deal with. So looking at the dream, I said, why is that sweet potato there? It's got to be there for a purpose, because you know everything in your dream is really an image that you created for a reason. So I said, imagine yourself as a sweet potato and tell me about yourself. And he says, I'm a sweet potato. Butter me up and I'll be good.
That's
great. So you can see when you let the sweet potato speak, it said everything about the feelings that this guy was afraid to admit to himself or admit to his boss that he needed to be buttered up in order to be a good worker.
Yeah, and the sweet potato, that might have seemed like a very peripheral thing. I really want to underscore what you just said, that I think you said everything in your dream is something that you've created for a purpose. It has a reason for being there.
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and you know, in teaching dream classes over the years myself, I know so often people are inclined to discard the fragments, the little pieces, because they say, geez, I can't remember the whole dream. All I remember is this little piece. But it's been my experience, as it has been yours, that if you really work with that fragment, no matter how small, just as with the sweet potato example you gave, you can really unpack a lot of meaning from it.
That's absolutely right. And in the approach I usually don't suggest to the dreamer what they work on. I ask them, what image in the dream kind of draws you towards it? And there are usually one or two that you're just drawn to. and some that the dreamer might not even talk about in the first narrative of the dream. But work on that.
I like the other thing that you said, though, in quoting Pearls, that the part of the dream that seems that sort of most despised or seems most evil or that that's got particular,
alienated, yeah.
Alienated, that has particular significance.
Yeah.
In relation to being the part of yourself that you are, I guess that you most don't want to look at, that you most don't want to own.
Yeah, it tends to be in these little not dehumanized images in the dream. So quite often I like to work with the things in your dreams, not, well, Jane, my next-door neighbor, was in my dream. That's a little harder. You can work with that, and it's you get a lot of good content. But quite often it's, you know, what was Jane wearing? Sometimes it's the dehumanized parts that have the really interesting stuff to work on.
Some people are really hard to get into that frame of mind, though. They're just resistant to, you know, well, doorknobs can't talk. I don't know what the doorknob's going to say.
Well, you'd be surprised. Yeah. What I've done, and because I learned this by with some training in Gestalt therapy many years ago, and you're right. Sometimes it's hard to get a person into actually speaking. But so what I've done is because the Gestalt work, Gestalt therapy is really a clinical approach, and it takes people very deep, very fast. So that's not necessarily what you need to do when you're doing personal dream work. So what I tried to do over the years is to understand how I could take all the power of this Gestalt approach, this role play approach, and turn it into something that's easy for people to get into, as well as not take them too deep, but yet get all the information out. So what I did was I refined this technique into a really quick 6-question procedure that just gets enough information hidden deep within the dream image to determine what emotional issues the dream is dealing with without going too deep. Some of my students have called it the 6 magic questions because it just kind of seems to target the issues very simply. And what I do is I basically ask the person to imagine that they're this thing in the dream. And if they have a hard time imagining that they're a doorknob, then at least imagine what a doorknob might say. And there's only 6 questions they have to answer. And as they go through the process, they come up with some answers that are pretty well targeted at what's going on in the dream and what it's dealing with in waking life.
Well, what are these 6 magic questions?
Okay, so let's take an example. Here's the 6 questions, but then I'd like to, if we have time, put it in the context of an example so
sure.
People understand how to use it. Is that good?
Yes, we can do that.
Okay, great. When you're the doorknob or the door or something like that, basically, we usually go through a little exercise, a little breathing exercise. Just take 3 deep breaths and bring this image to your mind's eye and get closer to it on each breath. And then either imagine what the image says, or if you can really become that image, speak as if you're the image. And the first question is, what are you? You describe yourself. The second is, what is your purpose or function? Mm-hmm. Third is, what do you like about being this thing in the dream? Fourth is, what do you dislike about being this thing in the dream? The fifth is, what do you fear most? And last is, what do you desire most? It was actually designed to in a triplets to get at certain specific pieces of information. What are you and what is your purpose or function relates the role that this part of you is playing in the dream to a potential role in waking life.
Okay.
The second, what do you like or dislike about being these things, brings forth conflicts about playing this role or this part of yourself playing this role that might relate to conflicts in waking life.
Sure.
And what do you fear and desire most relates to these emotional pressures that you put on yourself that drives that conflict. So it's not magic, but it's actually designed specifically to find out those things.
Yeah, great. I could see where those would be very productive.
Okay, so let me give you an example. If we get time, I'll take you through an actual dream and that uses it because it'll help folks who want to use this procedure to understand how to use it. Oh, and by the way, it can be found on my website, www.dreamscience.org, or, of course, in the book Dream Language.
I'll put a link to dreamscience.org in the show notes as well.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. Here's the dream. It says, a friend of mine is painting my newly painted gray walls red and blue. I try to brush it off with a rag, and I woke up screaming. So this was a nightmare that this girl had. And, I mean, it didn't seem like a nightmare. It just somebody was painting her walls red and blue. And so I said, well, what's going on in your life now emotionally at the time? You know, is there anything happening that disturbs you? She said, yes, in waking life, I'm very nervous about moving to a new city for a new job. Because on my last two jobs, even though I did really good work, I was somehow got in conflict with my boss and told I was no longer needed once the job was done. So in essence, she got laid off, or at least was feeling that she was going to get fired. Now, oddly, the dream of painting the walls red and blue doesn't seem to relate much to the waking life situation. But when we get in it, you'll see that it has everything to do with that situation.
Okay.
So first thing I do is I call dream orientation, is kind of, and this is what most dream analysis techniques or dream work techniques, I hate to call it analysis, but dream work techniques do, is they look for metaphors in the dream story. Was there any words said in the dream narrative that might relate to the waking life situation? And the only words we could find was when she said, I tried to brush it off with a rag. So I asked her, is there anything that you're trying to brush off?
Yeah, that immediately struck me, you know, as I heard the dream, the brush off just leaped out at me.
Yeah, exactly. So here's a word that says, you know, maybe there's a connection here. So you basically feed it back the dreamer and say, is there anything you're trying to brush off in life, waking life? She says, yes, I am trying to brush off this fear I have of moving to this new job. So here's the first link with the waking life situation. Now, the problem with just metaphor work on the dream itself is that that's about as far as it goes. It links the dream with a waking life situation, which is very useful to do, but it doesn't tell you anything deeper that's going on. And so most dream work approaches begin with sort of a cognitive dialogue going on at this point, trying to dig deeper and deeper to explore the parts of the dream that were related to deeper emotional situations. The problem with that is it's the rational mind discussing the dream, and the rational mind was asleep at the time. It wasn't involved in the dream. So what I like to do is use this letting the dream speak approach, because it involves the part of the brain that was awake during the dream at the time, that was involved in creating the dream. And I find it's a lot more effective. So let's go. Let's take it a little further. We start first by asking the dreamer to pick some sort of image in the dream that you were drawn to, that just, you know, you felt some affinity for. It just kind of draws you to. You're curious about it. It was important to you. And oddly enough, she said the rag. Okay, she could have picked the walls, the girl who was painting the walls, things like that. She said the rag that she was trying to wipe off the paint with. And so I said, okay, great. The next step is to basically take her into the rag to try to see how far we can have the dreamer become this dream element, this rag. And so I asked her to, you know, take three deep breaths and come closer and closer to becoming this this rag, and if she couldn't, to at least try to imagine how the rag might answer these questions. So once she was said, I'm there, I'm the rag, I asked her, what are you? Describe yourself. She said, I am a rag in somebody's hands. And the second question was, what is your purpose or function as this rag? She says, to be handy and clean things up. The third question, what do you like about being a rag, being available, needed, and used? What do you dislike about being the rag in the dream? She said, getting thrown away after the job is done.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So all of a sudden you realize this is not a rag talking. This is the dreamer talking from deep within. The emotions are coming out. And so then I ask a fifth question. What do you fear most as a rag? She says, getting dirty and being thrown away. So So now you're getting into the fears that are related to her waking life fears. And then the last question was, what do you desire most? She says, staying clean and continuing to be used. Okay, so it's kind of apparent as I relate this dream to you and this sequence of questions that there are some things in here that relate to the emotions surrounding the situation in her waking life.
Definitely.
And so the next step we do with this dream, is we feed these answers back to the dreamer. Now, if you're just doing your work yourself, you write these answers down when you're the rag or the doorknob or whatever. You just write the answers to the questions down and look at them as if they're not a rag talking, but if they are about you talking about how you feel or a situation in your waking life, and then they begin to stand out. So I asked her, I said, how does I am a rag in somebody's hands relate to your waking life situation? She says, my life right now, and if I take this new job, is totally dependent on this new boss. So she felt like she was a rag in this new boss's hands. And I says, how about my purpose is to be handy and clean things up? What's that all about? She says, that's what I consider my purpose on my job, is to clean things up that need cleaning up. I said, okay. Now, how about your answer to 3 or 4, which is, I like being available and needed and used, but I dislike getting thrown away after the job. She said, well, I'm pursuing this new job because it makes me feel needed and used, but I don't like it that, you know, I keep doing this and getting told that I'm no longer needed when I finish what I was hired to do. So now you can see her conflict in life relating to her jobs. Is she goes from job to job because she feels needed when she's first hired, but then something goes wrong and she feels rejected, you know, it's thrown away like the rag.
Yes.
And then the last, or the fifth question, I said, well, how about I fear getting dirty and being thrown away? She says, I fear that I'll mess up and get thrown out. That's what's happened on my last job, and I'm afraid it'll happen again. And the last question was, what does I desire to stay clean and continue to be used have to do with your waking job? She says, I have to figure out a way not to aggravate my boss, but to stay clean so this won't happen again. So you can see in this, it takes only about a minute or two to go through these six questions, and it tells you that the dream is not just about, you know, this waking life situation, getting this new job, and trying to brush it off, but there are some real deep conflicts that come out when you just let that rag or that doorknob or the door or whatever it is in your dream speak.
Yeah, now there is a question that arises, and maybe this happened so long ago that you won't know the answer, but the question that comes to mind is, since she already knew about this situation, what did she learn from the dream that was new for her or that gave her a different perspective?
That's a good question. And that's actually the rest of the technique and approach. Because once you find out from the dream work, what emotions are driving your actions in the situation, you need to find a way of dealing with them, okay? This dream work goes fairly deep, although, you know, she was able to pretty well keep her head through the whole thing because you just answer these silly little questions. But what it showed her was that indeed she was trying to hide from these feelings, these fears. And that's what was causing all this tension over the job. She hadn't fully realized before she did the dream work, or at least she had not expressed the true fears that she was feeling, that she was going to screw up again and get fired again on the job, and now she is totally dependent on this new boss. She's going to be in a new location. So all these feelings came out by being this rag that she just didn't want to look at. And when we work on the color in the dreams, in a minute, you'll see that that's exactly the case. She was brushing it off. She was trying to shield herself from these feelings.
Yes. Now, I know you've done a lot of research on color, and your work was even featured in Reader's Digest magazine. So using this dream, maybe you can tell us a bit about the role of color in dreams.
Oh, okay. Yeah, why don't we do that, and then we'll get back to the how we work with the dream once we know all this information. Because working with an image in a dream gives you an awful lot of information, just like we just illustrated. A tremendous amount of information comes out. But also, dreams, when you see the dream image in color, as this was, it had gray and red and blue, they're there for a purpose, too. They're just as important. And working on a card, a dream, versus working on a red card, you can well imagine there's going to be a big difference. Okay, that the red is going to have some way of some modifier of that image that's very important. So basically what I did was when I taught many years ago dream work, the one thing that was never explained, and of course when you teach a course, you pretty well have to figure out what everything is all about. One of the things I could never figure out what it was all about was color in dreams, because there's very little work done on it. So I actually did my own research into color, and basically what I found is color relates to emotion. Much of the research came from this field called color psychology, where a lot of research was done early on in the 40s and 50s, looking at the human response to color, how we as humans and how our nervous systems respond to color. And it was found out that color, the autonomic nervous system, actually subliminally responds to color. For instance, red, if you illuminate yourself with red, you can perceivably, you can measure an increase in heart rate and measure increase in breathing, increase in appetites, things of that sort. And it's all subliminal. And same thing with blue. When you flood yourself with blue light, the nervous system begins to go into a calming mode. The breathing slows, the heartbeat slows, almost preparing us for sleep, that sort of thing. And that seems to make sense, but it all happens at a subliminal level, and all this knowledge has been obtained on what various colors do to us, how we react to various colors, and it's really, the field is part of what we see now today in our packaging and painting of rooms and things of that sort. So it's come out in the advertising field is what really uses the knowledge of our subliminal response to color. Mm-hmm. Well, what I did was I had all this database now of the emotional responses to color in waking life, and I used this Gestalt approach to understand what emotions were inside of colored images, and I found that the emotions inside colored images and dreams were very much the same as what color psychologists were saying was our human emotional response to color. So I realized that the same response we have in waking life to color is what is being represented in our dreams in color. In other words, the emotion of being anxious in waking life maybe represented in red in dreams, things of that sort. So by doing these correlations, I found that essentially color relates to emotions. And so what I did was I cataloged a lot of the emotional responses to various colors, which you can actually see on my website, dreamscience.org, by just clicking on the color button, or it's in the book. But I use these as not the meaning of color in dreams. That can be dangerous. It's sort of like, a dream dictionary. But I use it as a way of triggering this aha with the dreamer. Mm-hmm. If you look at the color red, for example, and the emotional statements that are there, one or two may trigger a sort of an aha response that says, oh, gee, that is kind of how I felt the other day. So that's how I use it. So let me give you an example with this particular dream. As you remember, the dreamer was trying to brush off her feelings of fear about going to this new job. So what I do is I ask the person, I tell them to kind of close their eyes, and I'm going to read a number of statements. And you tell me which one or more of these statements sound like a way you felt in waking life, and then we'll relate to that feeling to the dream. And so I said, let's start out with gray. And so there was like 8 emotional statements in my color database for gray. And I started out, I said, the first statement, I want to shield myself from the feelings. And she, sticks her finger up, says, that one. Because she was trying to shield herself, to try to brush off these feelings. Second, I feel emotionally distant, only an observer. Third, I'm standing aside, watching myself mechanically go through the motions. Fourth was, I want to remain uncommitted, non-involved, shielded, separated from the situation. And the fifth, I do not want to make a decision that requires my emotional involvement, and on and on. She said, four and five. She said, I don't want to make a decision that requires my emotional involvement. And it turns out that she so wanted to distance herself from these feelings and not make a commitment to this new job. Her new job was starting in 2 weeks. She had not even sold her house. She hadn't even put it on the market. So she was that disconnected from her emotions around the situation and that fearful. And it was all came out in the gray in the dream, the gray walls.
Interesting.
So that's how color, by working on color in your dreams this way and using these statements just to kind of trigger like feelings in your waking life, you get a lot more information.
Yeah, I can see
and that. And we went to the red and the blue. I won't read all the statements that are on the website or in my book, but in the red, one of the statements that there was 11 statements I read to her in red, and the one that popped out was, I want to win, succeed, and achieve. And when I read the statements for blue, there were 7 of those. The one that she said, you know, gave her an aha was, I need a relationship free from contention in which I can trust and be trusted. So in the dream, here was this girl painting the walls red and blue, which was the thing that shocked her. And quite often when there's two colors like this that are impaired in the dream, it relates to a conflict between those two emotions. Uh-huh. And she really was having a conflict between wanting this job to win and succeed and achieve versus wanting not to screw up and stay in a relationship with her boss free from contention, which can be trusted.
Definitely. Yeah, I can
see. So here the colors related as much to the conflicts that she was going through as the image in the dream.
Wow, that's great. I'm sure my audience is going to find this material fascinating and will want to visit your website. And if they really want to get a lot more information, they should come to the upcoming 24th Annual International Association for the Study of Dreams conference, which I think you are one of the chief organizers. Maybe you can quickly
tell us about that. Yes, I'm the program chair this year for that conference, and I would like to invite everyone to join myself plus actually 185 other presenters from all over the world to come to the International Association for the Study of Dreams 24th International Conference. And this year it's at Sonoma State University, June 29th through July 3rd of the year. It is really the largest international conference on the subject of dreams and dream work. There's never been one this size. And it's a chance for everybody to meet world-famous authors, psychotherapists, psychoanalysts, artists, educators, and researchers in the field of dream studies.
Yeah, and I'll certainly endorse that because I've been to some of these conferences. I haven't been to all 24. I think I was at the first one, and I was at one 2 years ago, and now this one's right in my backyard, so you know I'm going to be there.
That's great. Yeah, that is great. It sounds like a big scientific conference, but the reality is this is open to the public. It's multidisciplinary. We've got all sorts of events, not only on research. We have a huge research track that runs the entire length of the conference, but the dreams and the arts. We do a lot of special events like Dancing Your Dreams, things of that sort. So we kind of touch on those. We have psychic sessions on psi and dreams and psychic research and dreams. We have sessions on spiritual dreams and cultural. So we totally cover the whole field of dreaming, but from a very professional standpoint, and that these people are the true experts in the field, and all of their papers are juried and judged. Also, we provide CEs. ASD is approved by the American Psychological Association to sponsor continuing education for psychologists. So psychologists get something out of it more than just the educational part. And we also have a whole lot of fun. We've got wine tasting events, a dream art exposition, nightly receptions, dream telepathy contests, so I can try out your psychic skills with your dreams. And the most fun is we end with this dream ball where everybody dresses up like your favorite dream character.
Well, that's really, really sounds wonderful. What is the website that people should go to?
Okay, so if you have want information on this, go to www.asdreams.org/2007 or just to the ASD website, which is asdreams.org, ASDREAMS.org, and just click on the conference button.
Okay, well, Bob Haas, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, I really appreciate it. This was fun.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Robert Haas. You may want to visit his website at http://dreamscience.org. Bob also has an internet radio series on dreaming, which you may want to check out as well. Just look for the podcast link on his homepage at dreamscience.org. Plus, you'll find a lot of other very good resources there. Now, if you've been following this show, you know I have a long-standing interest in dreams and dream work. And consequently, it's very exciting to me that the International Association for the Study of Dreams is having its conference right here in my backyard at Sonoma State University, which is a mile from my house, and it's where I taught for 35 years. And I'm going to be helping to promote the conference by devoting the next 4 or maybe 5 or 6 shows to interviews with leading dream researchers who will be presenting at the conference. I'm also planning to attend the conference with mic in hand and to conduct a number of short interviews for a later post-conference Shrink Wrap Radio episode. Because the conference is coming out so quickly and because I may be away on vacation in Hawaii at the end of this month, I'm going to be cranking out these interviews more quickly than usual. If they're coming out too fast for you, well, that'll give you something to listen to when I'm off in Hawaii. I really encourage you to consider attending this conference if you have any interest in dreams or consciousness. It will be a varied and exciting event, and there's something there for everyone and lots of interesting people from all over the place. Plus, it will give us a chance to meet in person, you and me. People will be attending from all over the world, so no matter where you're located, you should consider whether or not you can squeeze it into your schedule and your pocketbook. The dates are June 29 through July 3rd, 2007, and time for signing up is running out. So check this out right away. To get all the info about the conference, go to www.asdreams.org. That's AS as in Alpha Sierra Dreams.org. The conference theme is the spirit of the dream, so click on the spirit of the dream link that you'll see there. And be sure to say hi if you go. I'll be the guy walking around with a microphone that says Shrink Wrap Radio on it.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, here's Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
This is show number 90, and number 100 is coming up quick, so please send any voicemail clips that I can use for our 100th celebration. Also, remember that our voice transition contest will be over at the end of this month of May 2007. The winner will get a free copy of the book by hypnotherapist Terrence Watts. So for either the 100th show celebration or a transition, please just send me a short voice clip. If you have the setup, you can send an MP3 file to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com or you can click on the My Chingo button on our website and record it there, or you can leave a voice message on Skype where our name is ShrinkPod, or our message line at 206-888-2746. The decision of the judges is final, as they say, with me being the judge, and I'll announce the winner in early June. So be sure to listen, and if you're the winner, send me an email so that I can know who you so that I can get your mailing address and send you the book. Also, as I announced last time, if you'd like to be able to purchase transcripts of these interviews, please drop an email to content@podsinprint.com to request that they add Shrink Wrap Radio to their transcription list. If they hear from enough of you, they will do so. So again, that's content@podsinprint.com. Well, we have one new addition to our Frapper Map. I want to give a big thank you and welcome to Adrian Stevenson in Manchester, England, who writes, "Fab podcast. Glad to join your group." And Adrian, I'm glad to have you join it. Finally, I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Podshow and GoDaddy. One of the places you'll find this show is at shrinkwrapradio.podshow.com, and you can subscribe to it there, as well as iTunes. You'll find great GoDaddy discounts for all your domain name and web hosting needs on our website at shrinkwrapradio.com.
This is Josh C. from San Jose. You're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Okay, let's get on to some recent emails. I heard from Derek P. in Canada suggesting that I use a live call-in format using a program called TalkShoe, and this would allow people to call in, ask questions, make comments as the show is being produced. However, I have some resistance to that idea because, for one thing, it would require that I do the show on a regular basis at a certain day and a certain time. And quite frankly, I've got so much going on in my life that I can't quite see getting that structured. The other thing is, I think most of the shows that I've heard that are using that technology have more than one person involved. You know, it's kind of a lot to juggle, and I'm doing this all by myself. I don't have an assistant or a co-host, you know, somebody to juggle the technology while I'm thinking about trying to answer somebody's question. So that's another reason why I'm a bit resistant. And I suppose a third reason is I like having a little time to think about my responses rather than having to respond right off the cuff. So it's a good suggestion, Derek. I'm going to wait for the technology to mature, see what other kinds of options are out there, and maybe sometime in the future I'll be more open to doing a live program. We'll see. But I sure appreciate your continued listenership and your suggestion. Next, we hear from Sean in New York City, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I discovered your show when I heard your interview on the Are You Serious show. I'm running through some of the episodes, and I really enjoy them. Great guests you've interviewed. I'm listening to the Archetype of the Wise Fool episode. Very interesting stuff. Thanks for this great show, Sean." Sean, thanks so much for writing and for checking out these shows. And you're the only person I've heard from so far, at least, that heard my Are You Serious interview, and I'm glad that that interview resulted in at least one new listener. I have no idea how large Are You Serious's audience is. I know that I'm a big fan. I don't know how many other big fans they have out there. Now, they're a show that's just sort of gone to a live kind of format where they have people writing in while the show's happening, not calling in, but writing in, and so that they can post questions. That might be something I would look at, but again, it only works if you're there at a predictable time. And since I've got listeners around the world, too, that's the other thing about the predictable time. Some of the people might be in bed. You know, a lot of the people are probably in bed at the time that I'm putting this show together. Next, we hear from Trevor, who says, "Hey, Dr. Dave, I just finished listening to the podcast about sports psychology, and near the end you asked a question about sitars and the like for different music as opposed to jazz. You should really stick with jazz because I love that music. It suits the show, and sitars would make listeners feel they were in a Thai restaurant. I doubt that it would be a Thai restaurant since sitars are an Indian instrument, but it might make them feel like they were in an Indian restaurant. So you have a point there. And he goes on to say it really wouldn't suit the show. Also, I've been listening to your shows, trying to get up to date, and I was wondering if you've done a show on depression or autism. If not, are you considering doing a show on those? Thanks for keeping for the great work and keep it up. Yes, you will find a show on autism, and I'm sorry I didn't look it up, but it's Lorna Catford was my guest. And also, I have shows on autism and depression, both on my other podcast at http://wisecounsel.mentalhelp.net. So, Trevor, I hope you're listening and that you can find them there. And finally, here's one last quickie from Shlomo, who writes, "Hi, just a note that I loved your Enneagram show. It was phenomenal. Thanks so much for doing such great shows as these. Regards, Shlomo."
I'm Jack Ward.
And I'm Shannon Hilty.
Please join us in the Sonic Society as we delve into the very best new audio cinema the world has to offer.
Each week, we showcase a new audio drama that you may not have heard of, made by a growing group of new radio play enthusiasts.
We also offer interviews, tips on audio works, and a continuing serial.
So if you love full cast stories, and who doesn't, please join us each week at the Sonic Society.
You can find us at sonicsociety.org or at any of the major directories like the Podcast Pickle or iTunes. Join us, won't you?
And when you come, bring a friend.
Yes, check out the Sonic Society podcasts. They're good folks, and we're happy from time to time to exchange promos with one another. Thanks again to Robert Haas for the interview on the language of dreams. Our next show will be with Dr. Curtis Hoffman on archaeology and dreams. It's been a long time since I've closed with PodSafe Music, and today I've got the itch. If you wish, stay tuned after our closing theme for The Spirited Sa-La-La-La by Angelique Kidjo. You can find out more about this exciting artist in our show notes. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Kilo fece Te ma fugiu con amici lo fece
So coming in.